Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us this week. I know we've been in a bit of hibernation mode along with the NFL. It's been a hiatus, so we appreciate your patience. We're thrilled to be back and hoping to be doing this quite frequently again now that training camps are nearing. So check us out each week, of course, on the Blog Talk Radio and subscribe to us on iTunes. Also check us out on Twitter at Arthur Arkish, at Hub Arkish, at Kevin Fishbane. Definitely follow us over there if you're not already. This week, we begin a division-by-division preview of the 2016 NFL season, taking a division each week and breaking down the changes, improvements, and prospects for all 32 NFL clubs. I joined Hub Arkish and Kevin Fishbane in a roundtable discussion beginning with the AFC West. And of course, we begin with the team that wins the division year after year and is heading into the 2016 as the defending Super Bowl champions, the Denver Broncos. They've had a turbulent offseason, and we explain how this team will look different in 2016.
Turbulent's a nice choice of words. Yeah, we talked about this a little bit last week. I don't remember a defending Super Bowl champion that has gone through the changes, many not of their own desire, that the Denver Broncos have this offseason. And so as we get in-depth here, first, it does seem clear, in spite of the presence of Paxton Lynch and folks selling the idea that Trevor Siemian, the former Northwestern quarterback, could be a contender for the spot, that Mark Sanchez will be their starting quarterback this year. Now, Kevin Fishbane, I know, is going to want to debate that point with me, being a Northwestern Wildcat himself. But nonetheless, Kevin, quarterback, you know, some would argue that the way Peyton Manning played last year and the fact that Osweiler never really did put 60 minutes together, that the biggest story may not be the biggest issue or the biggest change for this team this offseason.
Yeah, you know, you have to look at, obviously, you know, the people they have to replace on defense and trying to get the offense back to where, you know, they want it to be. And you look, the offense is not what carried it to a Super Bowl. When we look at what Peyton Manning did, it was protect the football and be a game manager. And that's something that Mark Sanchez, you know, he probably would scoff at that being his label when he was in New York. But look, I mean, he's not the reason they went to back-to-back AFC championship games, but he didn't hurt their chances necessarily to get there. And, you know, he did what he needed to do a part of those teams. And as he becomes kind of the bridge to Paxton Lynch, he can thank a very good defense to allow him to have a little less pressure. He's got a guy in Demaryius Thomas who's probably better than any of the receivers he played with in New York to throw to as well. So, you know, I think Garrett Kubiak just wants to keep this as open as possible. Why, you know, that's kind of his prerogative there. But, yeah, I still would imagine that Sanchez would be the starter week one. I think the question is how long until Paxton Lynch takes over.
You know, Arthur, obviously we'll focus a lot on the defense. That's what everybody's done because of the high-profile free agency defections there and the fact that Von Miller has the contract issues. But they're rebuilding at least three-fifths of this offensive line with nothing resembling sure things. The reason that Russell Okung is available to them is Seattle got tired of his injuries. He rarely plays more than 8, 9, 10 games a year. He's going to go in for Ryan Clady at left tackle. And then they let Ryan Harris move on. You got Donald Stevenson coming over from the Chiefs. And let's be honest, Donald Stevenson's just a guy. The interior of the line is mediocre at best. And, you know, the team that wants to run the football, they may have overpaid a little bit to match the offer sheet on C.J. Anderson. The offensive line is going to be a big issue until they prove otherwise as well.
Yeah, very much a work in progress, and frankly, they're going to be relying on a lot of recent high draft picks, whether it's maybe not high draft picks, mid-round to later round draft picks, but whether you're talking about Max Garcia in 2015, looks like the starting left guard, or Ty Sembrillo, the second rounder of the year before in 2015, is either going to be the swing tackle or is going to compete on one of those edges, depending on Russell Okung. That obviously has heightened value, the swing tackle spot with the Broncos. So no doubt about it, they're relying a lot on obviously John Elway's evaluations and then, of course, the coaching staff's ability to get these guys coached up and ready to play. So, you know, losing Evan Mathis is a big deal, but he was more stabilizing than actually a really good player for them. I think he brought more leadership and some consistency, but certainly he wasn't very good in pass protection and had more than his share of issues. So it is going to look a lot different, and now there's talk that, you know, they want to get C.J. Anderson kind of immersed as more of an every down back rather than Gary Kubiak's usual preference for the committee approach. So we'll see if Anderson becomes that 20 carry per game guy. I like Devontae Booker a lot, the guy they got in the fourth round as well out of Utah. So he's going to be an interesting back to try and factor into this run-first offense as well.
You know, obviously they didn't miss Julius Thomas all that much last year as he went to Jacksonville, was injured there as he was often in Denver. But Owen Daniels gave them a couple big catches, particularly in the playoffs. He's gone now. At tight end, Virgil Green, Jeff Huerman, Garrett Graham. I mean, these guys could play What's My Line, and nobody would guess on any three of them. You know, they've got really nothing special at tight end either. It's really interesting the choices that Elway and Kubiak are making, and we flip it over on the defensive side. Kevin, I come back to you. Von Miller seems to have his story straight now. He is sticking with, I will not play under the franchise tag. There was some ambiguity on that over a couple-day period last week where he said both, he's franchised, he'll play, and then he said he wouldn't play. We don't know if it's his agent talking or him talking, but the latest we have is he does not intend to play under the franchise tag. We know he turned down an $111 million offer. What we don't know is that his side's claims there was only $36 to $38 million guaranteed, which isn't enough comparably to some of the other big-money defensive contracts that have been signed this year. The Broncos say it's more like $56 to $60 million. All we know right now is that they got a standoff, and in fact, if he's not there at the start of the season, then all bets are kind of off on the Broncos.
Yeah, I've always believed that they'll get something done in the next 2 to 3 weeks before that deadline. But you do have two very stubborn people here. I shouldn't even say two. I mean, we know John Elway is stubborn. He probably has his price, and that's what he's going to go with. I wouldn't call Von Miller stubborn necessarily, but Von Miller is not going to just take the first deal that the team gives him. And Von Miller is a smart guy, and he knows where he stands in terms of defensive players in the league, how much he believes he deserves, and how important he was to gain that team to the Super Bowl next year. I would be absolutely stunned if he is not, with the team at least for the start of the preseason. Now, if they don't get a deal done, what are you going to do? Is he going to sit out and just not play at all? I feel like he should still play and sign his contract, get that guaranteed money, and then go from there. So, I think these guys are just digging their heels in. But the Broncos need Von Miller, and Von Miller needs a paycheck.
Well, and Arthur, the last two pieces of this story, Malik Jackson was a big offseason story, but let's face it, he was overpaid. It's not that big a deal for the Broncos. They liked Derek Wolfe more. They love Sylvester Williams. The bigger loss appears to be at inside linebacker, where Danny Trevathan is gone. They're hoping Todd Davis can step in. Can they replace Trevathan with Davis? And then we've got the issue, we don't know much about this gunshot wound to Aqib Talib.
Yeah, it's a good point, and the Broncos do have great depth in the secondary. That is the one unit that remained intact this offseason, and obviously the best corner trio in the league, at least for my money, with Harrison, Talib, and Roby. So it doesn't sound like the injury is too serious, but obviously we'll have to kind of monitor that. And then we can't forget about Wade Phillips. We did forget about mentioning wide receivers. Probably change on offense. Fortunately, they still have Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, of course. So whether it's Mark Sanchez or Paxton Lynch or whomever, they're going to have good pieces to work with on the perimeter. But just as far, is the defensive kind of turnover going on here. They overpaid a little bit to get Brandon Marshall back, their defensive play caller. He was a restricted free agent. So Todd Davis has been a bit of a journeyman, but I feel like as long as you still have that disruptive front and then you have the tremendous secondary and then the guy kind of, putting it all together in the wizard Wade Phillips, I think this defense is very likely still to be a top five unit this season and still is going to be the identity of this team.
A turmoil offseason, but still a pretty good football team.
We turn now to the Kansas City Chiefs, a team that has improved in recent years but can't quite make it to the top. We discuss what stands out in the offseason with Andy Reid's club.
Well, I think mostly they stood pat for the most part. They stayed old on defense. They made some surprising changes on the offensive line on the other side of the football, but for the most part, it's the Andy Reid scheme they're sticking with. They still believe in Alex Smith, and they believe that some of these aging warriors on defense still have plenty left. We don't know when to expect Justin Houston back. He's had serious knee issues, probably not ready for opening day, although he hasn't necessarily agreed to that. Can they get him back close to 100% by midseason? That'll be a big key for these guys. But I'll tell you one thing, the Pro Football Weekly 2016 NFL Preview Guide is available at newsstands now. And one of the things, of course, we do is poll all of our 20-some correspondents, all of our editors, and we come up with the predictions as to who's going to do what. And the Pro Football Weekly prediction is that the Chiefs will surpass the Denver Broncos and, in fact, will win the AFC West. And, Kevin, I'll come to you first. I think a lot of that is because of the belief in some of these guys on defense. They re-signed Derek Johnson, Tamba Ali. They've got a franchise tag on Eric Berry. We'll see if he gets a long-term deal. Houston is there. That's a ton of talent. And they've got Dontari Poe up front. And if these guys, many of them 30-somethings, can stay close to 100% and in their primes, the Chiefs will once again be one of the best defenses in the NFL. And that's where it all starts with this team.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it obviously is going to hinge on Justin Houston's health and when he's able to return. I guess I should say if he's able to return at a high level. But you look at some of the drafting they've done over the past few years. Dontari Poe is just such a great, you know, run stuffer. You look at Marcus Peters last year, top defensive rookie in the league with their first-round pick. They took a little bit of a risk on him, and he was fantastic last season. Made them feel comfortable not re-signing Sean Smith. And then you talk about having Eric Berry back there as well. But, you know, a lot of this, as you mentioned, the front seven, you know, Derek Johnson reaching the end of his career. You know, what kind of production can you still get out of Tamba Hali? So that's going to put the pressure on D4, especially until Justin Houston comes back. You know, D4 was a first-round pick in 2014 who didn't do much as a rookie, and they're really going to need him to kind of take that jump this year. And he's got a good D-line behind. You know, they used the second-round pick on Chris Jones. They got Jay Howard there, who was fantastic last season. So there's a lot to like about that Kansas City defense.
Well, and Arthur, they did re-sign a lot of the veterans, but Kevin mentions probably the biggest loss on that side of the football, and that is, of course, Sean Smith, who moved on via free agency. They loved Marcus Peters last year, but folks don't know a lot about Philip Gaines on the other side. They're going to be very young on the corner. They're going to have plenty of speed, but if there's an area where they're vulnerable, that could be it. Of course, when you've got certainly the second best safety in the NFL, if not one of the best. Of course, Earl Thomas usually gets that handle, but Eric Berry right there with him. And Berry, just such a great story, apparently fully recovered and in remission from his non-Hodgkin's lymphoma battle. This is one where you see these franchise tags and you say, oh, you may have to play under it. My gut tells me that in the next few weeks they get something done with Berry. They've tried to clear the cap space for it, and I think it's his presence back there that allowed them to go a little younger at cornerback, knowing that they couldn't re-sign everybody.
Yeah, it's a great point by you, and obviously, you know, John Dorsey probably looking ahead a year. I think we're going to talk about this later in the show, but he knew that Sean Smith, you know, was entering a contract year when he drafted Marcus Peters, the defensive rookie of the year. I wish I had the stat in front of me, but I can tell you that Sean Smith, really good physical press corner, not great ball skills. I believe he has one more interception in his entire career than Marcus Peters grabbed last season. So Peters is going to be a big part of that. Like you said, Berry covers up a lot of the other issues they may have at corner, and they really like Philip Gaines. They really like Ron Parker's versatility to play either corner or safety. So, and they spent a third-round pick on the Notre Dame former standout, Kavari Russell. So there are still going to be some options there. And as I think Kevin said, obviously what you can do in the front seven typically is also going to help your guys on the back end. And, you know, they've got Bob Sutton, of course, too, who's one of the league's better, you know, defensive coordinators, more aggressive coordinators. So still a ton to work with here, and they did a good job of retaining their own, as we talked about as well.
If we flip over to the other side of the ball, it always starts with the quarterback. And Alex Smith, for whatever reason, has always been a point of contention with a lot of NFL fans, even Chiefs fans. I've never been in that camp. I've always liked Alex Smith. I look at his winning record. I look at his efficiency. And actually, when you break down tape and you look at what he does when he has to do it, I don't believe he's got the limitations that some people put on him as a game manager. I think he's a game manager because Andy Reid wants him to be, not because he has to be. I've made reference to this a few times before. I did the Westwood One, the national radio call on that playoff game a couple years ago when they went into Indianapolis. They got beat 45-44, but it had nothing to do with the almost 400 yards that Alex Smith threw for without a wide receiver. Dwayne Bowe got hurt early in that game. Actually, Jamal Charles got hurt early in the game, so he had to throw the football, and then all he had to work with was Bowe. When he has to, he can air the football out. He is as good with his feet as any quarterback in the league, and nobody but Aaron Rodgers throws fewer interceptions. Kevin, we talk about Jamal Charles in that running game. You know, what's going to be interesting is Jamal Charles coming back off his second ACL injury. Now, it did happen early last season. It was week 5 against the Chicago Bears, so he should have enough time to be close to 100% by opening day, or if not that shortly thereafter. But with the production they got out of both Tre'Kendrick West and Spencer Ware, some people believe that they may not try and have Jamal Charles get 325 touches this year.
Yeah, it's one of those good problems to have. You know, both those running backs played well, helped them down the stretch get to the playoffs. They get, you know, the Chiefs gave both players contract extensions. You know, allows them to probably try to find a trading partner with Niall Davis at some point, who was expected to be kind of the heir apparent to Jamal Charles, but you know, they don't need him when they saw what West and Ware were able to do in that offense. So they would love it, though, if Jamal Charles could still be at the level of a player that could handle that many touches in the game. But if they don't need to do it, if they don't need to wear him down at all, why not use those other two backs? You know, there's some questions at offensive line, but I do like the Mitchell Schwartz addition at right tackle, and we'll see how some of the younger guys do. But obviously, big focus, and if Eric Fisher can can continue to kind of progress in his game over there on the left side.
Yeah, and Arthur, Kevin makes a great point because Eric Fisher, the number one player overall in the draft a few years ago, has never played up to that. He did start to play a little bit better second half of last season, but is looking like he may never be that left tackle number one overall you hope for. Mitchell Schwartz, a nice addition. They've got DuVernay Tardif. They drafted at guard a couple years ago, so they're a little bit younger up front. And then you get to receiver, where Jeremy Maclin was an outstanding addition in free agency last year. Travis Kelce, one of the lesser known but more productive tight ends in the league. They're just still not real deep past that, though. You look at Chris Conley, the youngster they drafted out of Georgia, they're hoping can become a big-time receiver. And then you got Albert Wilson, the little guy, on the other side from Jeremy Maclin. They probably got the two smallest starting wide receivers in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of their options on the perimeter at all, and it's a shame because I think Alex Smith is also underrated, as you alluded to, and certainly Jeremy Maclin was wonderful after following Andy Reid over and in his first season with the Chiefs last year, but there's just nothing else there that scares you. Yes, Travis Kelce is a really good player, and he got a huge contract, but it, you know, they seem to force it to him, but maybe they don't do it enough. We'd love to see one more third option there. And as you mentioned, Dorsey has spent some mid-round picks. Last year it was Chris Conley. 2 years ago, DeAnthony Thomas. Neither one of those guys has managed to put it together yet, although Conley did flash a little bit when Maclin was hurt in the playoffs last year. So, you know, this is going to remain, you know, the identity of this team is going to remain that deep backfield. But like you guys said, there are some questions up front. They're going to start the season without both week one starting guards from last year. Of course, Ben Grubbs and Jeff Allen. So a decent amount of turnover on the offense and maybe still a little bit short on firepower for Smith to work with.
As we said, according to the Pro Football Weekly poll, the Chiefs, a division champ, but the Broncos also a wild card. That may not be all from this division.
Before we move on to the second half of the AFC West, let's take a moment to talk about our excellent sponsor, Loot Crate. With Loot Crate, you get collectibles, apparel, and more from your favorite pop culture franchises delivered right to your door every single month. For less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items. Join us as we celebrate the futuristic. We've packed June's crate with items from some of pop culture's favorite prognostications of science and the future. Look toward tomorrow with items from Rick and Morty, Futurama, Mega Man, Valiant Comics, and Star Trek, including a model, a figure, and don't forget our monthly tee and pin. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off on any new subscription. Loot Crate, come geek out with us. Now let's move on to a team to keep an eye on in the 2016 NFL season, the Oakland Raiders. Last year, the Raiders got to 7-9 with a good quarterback in Derek Carr and a solid pass rusher in Khalil Mack, leaving Raiders fans optimistic about the 2016 season. Could this be the year the Raiders make a leap into the playoffs?
According to the Pro Football Weekly 2016 NFL Preview Magazine, again, it is available on newsstands now, our writers' poll, writers and correspondents' poll, says that yes, the Oakland Raiders are going to be a wild card team. In fact, our writers' poll predicts that there will be 3 playoff teams from the AFC West, the Chiefs winning the division, the Raiders the first wild card, the Broncos the second wild card. A lot of it is what you just talked about, some of the young studs that Reggie McKenzie has brought in just the last 3 seasons, Derek Carr at quarterback, Amari Cooper at wide receiver, Khalil Mack on the defensive side of the ball. But they are also kind of the flavor of the month right now, and people talk just about free agency and this offseason, and you look at the splash they made. They had a ton of money to spend. They got the best free agent offensive lineman out there in Kelechi Osemele. They signed Sean Smith. We talked about him leaving Kansas City a little while ago. They add Bruce Irvin from the Seahawks, Reggie Nelson, a 32-year-old safety coming off his best season in the NFL. And they did have some losses. They lost veterans. Safety Charles Woodson is going right to the Hall of Fame, probably from Oakland, but finally retiring after 18 years. Justin Tuck, an anchor on that defensive line. Curtis Lofton has moved on. Pretty good inside linebacker. So there's some folks to replace. But at the end of the day, Arthur, this is a team with young talent everywhere. We start on the offensive side of the football, where Derek Carr, he's got this in common with Drew Brees. I believe the first pick in the second round of the draft, but certainly played like a franchise-type quarterback in waiting last year for Oakland.
Yeah, he was outstanding for them. He stepped up not only as a player, but as a leader on that young offense. And certainly they're expecting an even bigger jump in year 3, and I think there's every reason to believe he will. The offensive line is tremendous. You mentioned Kelechi Osemele, obviously, was the big free agent get. but they also have some homegrown talent and Gabe Jackson at left guard, who's excellent. They spent big on Rodney Hudson last season, so I guess they have actually built part of that offensive line via free agency, brought back left tackle Donald Penn. So I think that they're going to have a good chance to have the best offensive line in the AFC. We'll see if they're in Dallas and Carolina's league, but pretty good stuff there. Obviously, Amari Cooper burst onto the scene last year. I think the key for Cooper is trying to sustain it for 16 games because he did fall off, seemed to hit that rookie wall a little bit. Dealt with some drops, but in terms of electricity after the catch and route running, I think he's everything you're looking for at the position. So a lot to be excited about on offense. I don't really love their backfield personally. I think Latavius Murray, maybe it's because he had his worst game of the season when we saw him at Soldier Field early last year, fumbling either two or three times, just couldn't hold on to the ball. But I believe he is coming off a 1,000-yard season, so obviously has been productive for them as well. And a lot of ammunition. They've got to find a way to put it all together and take that next step in what's been a really good division for the past several years.
Yeah, that is the question mark, Nate, on this football team at both the skill positions, running back and wide receiver. Murray's got a fumbling problem. DeAndre Washington is a little undersized behind him. They do have Roy Helu, who had some pretty good days as a backup with the Washington team. And then at wide receiver, Michael Crabtree, a really nice possession receiver opposite from Amari Cooper. But you get to the depth, and you look at Andre DeBose, who's going to be behind Crabtree, and you've got a couple other kids, in particular Andre Holmes, who they like a lot, a big receiver out of a small school, but he's been around for a few years, hasn't done much. And even at tight end, where they've got Clive Walford, these are not household names, and they don't have a ton of speed, and that really is the trend in the NFL right now.
Yeah, it definitely is, and this is a team that I think wants to run the ball more than it did last year when it threw a lot, when it was kind of in these shootouts with a kind of mediocre secondary, and obviously they didn't run the ball the way they wanted to. Latavius had a fumbling problem and only averaged 4 yards a carry. But, I mean, the more that they can run the ball, it'll kind of alleviate things as far as relying on some of these skill position guys. But you're right, they still need a guy who can really stretch the field. And I love Amari Cooper as much as anyone. And like you said, Michael Crabtree is an outstanding possession receiver, a great guy to have as a number two to Amari Cooper. But it would be nice to have a guy who could really stretch the field and really sort of open things up both for Derek Carr's deep ball and for Latavius Murray trying to run inside. I don't think they have that yet. Even as nicely as they've done this offseason and in the past few years of plugging their holes, I think that's the one missing component in this offense right now.
You know, Arthur, you come back and look at this defense beyond Mac. They brought in Bruce Irvin from Seattle. I'm not a huge Bruce Irvin fan. I think he's a great athlete. Not sure he's a great football player. But they also last year signed Malcolm Smith from Seattle. He, of course, the Super Bowl MVP in the Super Bowl that the Seahawks won. But in between them, Todd Heaney, anybody know? I'm sorry, Ben Heaney. Does anybody know who Ben Heaney is? Well, he's their starting middle linebacker, 6 foot, 231 pounds. We talked about Sean Smith and Reggie Nelson coming in. They drafted Carl Joseph in the first round out of West Virginia. Now, I love this kid. I think he's going to be special if he can stay healthy. But they're an interesting team, and they've got some of these great young players, but the veteran depth to go along with them is unproven at best.
Yeah, I think so, and that's obviously going to increase the importance of them staying healthy, and no one can predict that, of course. And Reggie McKenzie is drafted pretty well, so he's hoping that he has improved his depth with guys like Jihad Ward and Shalik Calhoun once you get into the early and mid rounds of this most recent draft to kind of back up some of those pass rushers that they spent premium either picks or money on when you're talking about Bruce Irvin and Khalil Mack, of course. The secondary is, you can't call it much improved because you lose Charles Woodson, but Carl Joseph does have a chance to be an immediate difference maker if he's okay with the knee that that ended last season early for him. And, they waited and waited, Reggie McKenzie did, on Reggie Nelson. And I think a lot of us were surprised to see him last into that second wave of free agency, of course, because he led the NFL in interceptions last year. So they're hoping that he's going to be able to kind of carry over that playmaking and help the Raiders make more impact plays on defense, because I think those were missing last year. So there's a lot of stars here, but like you said, there's kind of some anonymous characters too. They're hoping either those guys are going to take the next step or the stars are going to be so good that it's not going to matter all that much. But Ken Norton does have, he's got some nice pieces to work with, and he's going to have to do some developing as well.
The Raiders, our pick is a wild card out of the AFC West.
We wrap the AFC West with a team that we predict will be at the bottom of the division when the season comes to end. That's the San Diego Chargers.
Tom Telesco and Mike McCoy obviously believe that they are closer to what was a very competitive 9-7 team in 2014 that lost on the final day of the season, keeping them out of the playoffs, than the team that came completely apart last year. Now, there's no question that they struggled with a number of injuries last year, but then you look at some of the roster changes and people who have moved on. They brought in a bunch of mid-level free agents, wide receiver Travis Benjamin, nose tackle Brandon McBain, pretty good player, nothing great. You got cornerback Casey Hayward, safety Dwight Lowry, but then you lose your best defensive player for years in Eric Weddle. Cornerback Patrick Robinson was coming on. Wide receiver Malcolm Floyd is retired. Tight end Ladarius Green has moved on. So it's almost just like they're swapping parts on the chessboard. I thought this team had the worst offensive line in football last year, and they did very little to change that. Now, they believe that it was as much injuries as it was a lack of talent, and that they're going to come back again this year with King Dunlap out at left tackle and Franklin and Turek and DJ Fluker inside, Barksdale at right tackle. Phillip Rivers has been running for his life for the last 2 or 3 years, and Arthur, we'll let you start on this one. I'm not sure how that's going to get much better. If Dunlap is healthy, they're going to be better on his blind side. But at the end of the day, it just was shocking to me that they didn't move to upgrade this offensive line.
Yeah, you know, of course, they were, you know, up there kind of holding all the cards at the top of the draft and had the option to choose from. I don't think it was going to be Laremy Tunsil given his slide, but they had a lot of options in a very deep offensive tackle draft and decided to stay away from that position altogether. Now, they did add Matt Slauson, of course, after he was became a cap casualty in Chicago, and I do believe he's going to be the week one center for the Chargers, and I think that could be a really nice move. I think that's going to help DJ Fluker at right guard. That's going to help the center they just drafted out of USC in the third round this year. So I think that's a nice move, and they're just assuming if Keenan Allen could stay healthy. Of course, he was on the record-breaking pace last year. Then maybe this offense is going to kind of gain some traction. Of course, it's also going to require Melvin Gordon to really just have a sea change over his disappointing rookie year. And it didn't get much better in the offseason when he underwent microfracture surgery. So they could be depending a lot more on Danny Woodhead and Brandon Oliver again behind that so-so offensive line. And we'd be remiss if we talked about the whole offense, of course, without Phillip Rivers. He's one of my favorite players in the league to watch. He's such a gamer, and you'd kind of like to see better for him towards the tail end of his career. But hey, he's still got his partner in crime, Antonio Gates, who's gunning for a touchdown record. And like I said, Keenan Allen has a new deal, and if he is healthy, I do think he is going to be a legit number one for them. So, you know, there's a lot of questions, but I think there also is some areas to get excited about with the offense. I think the defense actually has probably made even greater strides this offseason.
Yeah, and we'll get to the defense in just a second. But, Nate, listen, Antonio Gates has been a great story from the day he came out of college basketball in Ohio and became one of the great tight ends in the NFL. But watching him in a few games last year, he literally appeared to be trotting rather than running. I think he's going to celebrate his 73rd birthday this year sometime during the season. Obviously, I'm just having a little fun with it, but he's actually going to be 36, and he looks sometimes and plays like he's in his mid-40s. And again, this is a team, Keenan Allen looks really nice at wide receiver. I know you're going to be a Travis Benjamin fan, those Cleveland roots, but at the end of the day, I love Phillip Rivers just like Arthur, but I don't know if they've given him the weapons to work with.
Yeah, and that was the problem last year, is his weapons, along with his offensive line, just kind of crumbled around him. And Keenan Allen was on pace to set the record for the all-time receptions in a season in the NFL. I mean, he has a lacerated kidney and goes out. But, I mean, I think he's a fantastic possession receiver. What they needed opposite him was a speed element kind of guy to help out the running game and just give some spacing. That's what they're hoping Travis Benjamin can be. And, honestly, I'm actually not a huge Travis Benjamin fan, because I think he's a guy who makes a lot of his plays on broken plays. He has a hard time getting off the line because he's not that big. It's a bit of a weird system fit for Phillip Rivers and his sort of quick-release system. But Ken Whisenhunt likes to play vertical, so he's going to roll with a speed receiver like that. And you got to hope it works out a little bit. And you're right, Antonio Gates is certainly getting up there. That's why they went out in the second round and got Hunter Henry out of Arkansas. Real soft-handed receiver. They just want to build his strength a little bit so he can block and be more of a full-time guy. But I think between those two, and if they could just stay healthy, it's like with the offensive line. If they can stay healthy, Phillip Rivers can work with a lot, and I think they're going to be a lot better this year if they just have guys on the field.
You look at the other side of the football, I don't think anybody would dispute that Joey Bosa is worthy of the third overall pick in the draft. Some people had him as high as number one throughout his final, not his senior, but his junior year at Ohio State. One of the best pure defensive ends in football. But a 40-front defensive end at Ohio State. And when the player's dad, John Bosa, who's a former NFL player himself, is off the record telling friends and media that he can't believe that Bosa went to a 3-4 team and that he knows his son is probably not a 5 technique, again, it kind of leaves you scratching your head. Are they considering standing him up and letting him play the outside rush backer? They haven't been real clear on that. According to everything we've seen, they've got him lining up at the 5 technique. Brandon Mabane is a nice player. I kind of poo-pooed that in the free agency signings, particularly going inside on the nose. He's one of the more mobile big men around. Corey Leggett out of Illinois has been kind of the mainstay of this defense in recent years. Jeremy Adeocho, who they drafted out of Georgia Tech a few years ago. You got Manti Te'o in the middle, and then Denzel Perryman, Melvin Ingram out there. So they've got a lot of young athletes, Arthur, but most of these guys have never lived up to their draft potential.
No, they haven't. You know, Melvin Ingram, I think, is probably kind of the poster boy for that, and you know, he has just had a hard time staying on the field. But I kind of like the bookend pairings they have right now, and Adeocho, if that's how you say that, and Ingram, gives them a lot of speed and explosion off the edge. And I definitely think Joey Bosa is going to start off as a 5-tech, as you guys just alluded to. But again, it's a sub-package league now, so he's going to be, you know, he could be kicked inside. He's going to be rushing, you know, with his hand in the dirt often, but I think he's still going to be allowed to kind of get up the field and do what he does. So I think that fit's going to be okay. You know, in the secondary, obviously replacing Eric Weddle is going to be the key here. And Dwight Lowry, no one's going to pretend that that's not a huge step down. Lowry's been a bit of a career journeyman who's actually coming off a really good season with the Colts. But the safety, I think, you know, the safety position, both spots, is a major question mark here. And they're kind of banking on Jason Verrett continuing to ascend. I like Casey Hayward. We watched him a lot when he was with the Packers. And I think he brings some playmaking and some versatility to the secondary. But you know, safety is a position to worry about for sure. And inside linebacker, I think you still have some questions opposite Denzel Perryman. We don't really know what Manti Te'o is entering his fourth season already.
And, Nate, we've only got about 30 seconds left, but certainly you've got Mike McCoy on the bubble. A lot of people didn't think he'd survive after last year. There's going to be extra pressure there, as the watch will be on if the Chargers don't get off to a decent start.
Yeah, it is, and it's interesting that they kind of just extended him by a year, and he's sort of in this weird spot where he's got to try and win now enough to keep that job and to keep this thing building. And so that was sort of the interesting dilemma they were in going into the draft. Did they pick an impact player early on that can kind of help them win now, or do they pick a guy that's going to solve problems long term? And they sort of went win now with Joey Bosa over an offensive tackle when they had so much locked up at those positions. But it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be tough also, you know, for him to do this in this kind of tough division with three potential playoff teams.
That'll do it for our in-depth look at the AFC West. Join us next week when we take a look at the NFC North, where the Packers try and regain their dominance, the Vikings try and hold them off after finally taking over that division last year. The Bears are much improved. We'll see if they're able to make any headway. And the Lions, well, for the second straight offseason, they're trying to replace a franchise figure. Check us out each week, Blog Talk Radio. Subscribe to us on iTunes, also on Twitter, at Arthur Arkish, at Hub Arkish, at Kevin Fishbane. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Loot Crate. And remember to head over there and sign up, and be sure to use your promo code SHAW for $3 off your new subscription. For Hub Arkish and Kevin Fishbane, I'm Arthur Arkish. We'll see you next week.
The Shaw Media Podcast Network has a lot of really great sports podcasts, but are you more than just a sports fan?
You need to be listening to The Unprintable Podcast, which is a pop culture podcast with voices from journalists like myself, Nicole Franz.
And me, Jason Frummer.
As we discuss TV, movies, and of course, Jason's favorite subject,
music.
We'll also have some arts coverage, and you can catch special guests and exclusive interviews.
It's all right here on Unprintable. You can find us in the Shaw Media Podcast Network, available on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. Remember,